Asla, I feel like it's been so long, you know? Like, I don't know the last time we did one of these, but it feels like forever. I just got back from golfing in Italy for work. And you, I think, were in Argentina, right?
Yeah, I was knuckle deep in Milanesas and soccer in Argentina. I attended the Clásico de Avellaneda, which is between Racing and Independiente. Then I watched some of my favorite little clubs from different tiers of Argentinian soccer pyramid. One of them is Atlanta, my team there. There's nothing like watching these smaller teams and the hope, the thrill of soccer when they're like trying to get promoted to the upper, level in the soccer pyramid, or if the relegation's on the line. So I think between the heartbreak, the glory, the chaos, good Milanesas, I think what makes for me soccer so special around the globe for that specific reason.
Oh my God, I know. Promotion and relegation is just such an integral part, I feel, of soccer, and it just adds that extra layer of drama and excitement because teams are going to get rewarded or punished based on their on-field performance. And unfortunately, my club, Manchester United, not that they're in a relegation battle, but they're relegation battle adjacent, and it has me very, very worried that such a storied organization like United are 14th or 15th or whatever they are, and are kind of in that conversation as opposed to talking Champions League or Premier League. But I think with Pro Rel, look at Wrexham, right? We all love Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney and Welcome to Wrexham and just the Hollywood flavor that they've given that club that no one really heard of, at least in the United States prior to their purchase of it. But what they've done on the field, they've injected so much money into that club, into the race course, the infrastructure, just everything, that they've gone from the fourth tier to the third to the second in consecutive seasons. And now they're sitting, if I'm not mistaken, they're in second place in League One, and they have a chance to do three consecutive promotions. And it's like that's what people care about, right? Like you tune in and you go, are these guys going to get promoted? Are they not? Like you have such a rooting interest in this club that, again, you had zero affiliation with prior to their purchase and prior to this television show. So it's just, I think it's just one of those things that you can't overlook the significance and the impact of what promotion and relegation, obviously the promotion part, has done to a club like Wrexham.
And it's also about the money, right? You can buy a very cheap small club from a lower division, and if you actually play your cards right, it becomes a very valuable investment if it goes up in the pyramid and then plays in the higher tiers of the league. But we don't have promotion and relegation in here in the US, but I think that's changing. The USL, United Soccer League, if you're listening from outside of the United States, the league that has played second fiddle to MLS announced it's bringing promotion and relegation to US for the first time and launching a Division One Men's Pro League in 2027-28 season.
I feel every keyboard warrior, Reddit poster, any soccer pundit, everyone is like, we want Pro Rel, we want Pro Rel, we want Pro Rel. Say that five times fast. And now we're finally getting it. So USL isn't just shaking up the US soccer pyramid. They are absolutely tearing it down and they're rebuilding it. And I know personally, I couldn't be more excited because I think it's just going to benefit us altogether.
Yeah, I agree. And then this means teams will actually have earned their place and there will be a lot of excitement to watch their games. It will be just like in England, Spain, Germany, Italy, Turkey. Win and you move up, lose, struggle, you drop down. It's a massive shift for American soccer.
Yeah, they literally do it everywhere on the planet except here. So it's one of those things. I know we like to do things differently here. I know we like to do, things the American way and say the rest of the world is wrong. Now we're finally doing this. Again, pending all the approvals and the logistics, but it really looks like we are on the path to promotion and relegation. And here to break it all down is Orange County Soccer Club owner and CEO James Keston. Right now, Orange County SC plays in the USL Championship, the league's top tier, at least until 2027. Welcome to Finance of Football. I'm Michael LeRae.
and I'm Asla Pellet. James, thank you so much for joining us. I guess first and most obvious question, what are your thoughts on promotion, relegation, coming to the USL and US soccer in general? Is it long overdue?
You know, I think it's exceptionally exciting. It's exciting for us as owners. It's certainly exciting for the fans and something obviously I've been hearing about going back to not only my 10 years in USL, but even before that, you know, when with my involvement with MLS. And I think it's kind of a part of the evolution of soccer in this country. You know, evolution does not happen overnight. It happens over longer periods of time. And I think this is the beginning of the beginning of a process, not the end of a process. So, you know, for us to, as owners of the USL Championship, to vote on this obviously took us a couple of years and a lot of conversations and really kind of nailing down what the structure is going to be like, you know, how we would benefit, how everybody else would benefit. Obviously, we think the fans will be happy and will benefit from all of this. But if you get the structure wrong, you know, you do damage to soccer in your entire country. So that was kind of what we wanted to avoid. But now it really is the beginning of a process of figuring out how this is going to work and getting step by step all of those processes done. Obviously, process one has to be U.S. soccer approving USL's Division One league. Without this, all of this halts. But that's, you know, step number one.
Yeah, no pressure. I love how you're like, if we do it wrong, it just ruins the whole thing. Like, we need to do this right. So I love that. Yeah, no pressure and only a few years to make sure that it is right and foolproof and all of those things. But kind of looking bigger picture again, just like, what message does this send, not only around U.S. soccer, but to the rest of the world? Like, I feel U.S. soccer, when it, you know, not when it started, but we've kind of had our own brand of things and done everything kind of our way. And then now it's like with Pro Rel, we're kind of, I don't want to say assimilating with the rest of, you know, soccer around the world, but we're kind of playing their game a little bit more. So I was just going to say, you know, what message does that send that we're finally kind of, you know, playing along nice in the sandbox with everybody else?
I mean, from my perspective, I grew up at just the right time. I think I was 12 when the U.S. qualified for its first World Cup. So I was able to be a fan as it actually became kind of a sport. I mean, a little bit of NASL in the 60s and 70s, but really, you know, in the modern age, that's when it all started. And obviously MLS was set up as a structure to deal with a specific problem, which is that we didn't have the infrastructure. To a large extent, we didn't have the players, and we couldn't compete at all in soccer. And it was set up as kind of a defensive, more corporate structure for that purpose. Obviously, we are in a very different stage in soccer now in this country. And, you know, I think we're all kind of feeling like, on one hand, the growth is going to continue for a long time. The demographics, you know, for fanhood in this country are amazing with soccer, especially among young people. But we need to take a step forward to make our leagues more competitive and our players more competitive. You know, I'm at my core, and I think a lot of us who do this, despite being business people, I mean, more or less business people, we're U.S. soccer fans. We want to see us raise the World Cup. We want to see us really competing. We certainly don't want to see us losing to Panama in the Nations League. So we are at a certain point. The players are certainly far more talented than they have been before. The structure is certainly better than it is before. But it feels like we're kind of stalling out a little bit here. And we're not making the steps forward that will make our leagues the best in the world and our players the best in the world. And I think that's, for me, what this is all about.
A few weeks ago, I was listening to Tim Howard at his podcast talking about this before the announcement. And he was saying, as a former also USL team owner, right now he pivoted to the other side, but he said that USL they were discussing whether or not promotion relegation is a good model for soccer in the US. And he said, if I'm not misquoting him, he said, it would be a better format for USL because the structure is already there. And with the right broadcast deal, it would be a very compelling product to offer to the US soccer fans. And Michael and I, like, we watch a lot of soccer around the world. The most exciting week in, you know, in Premier League is that last week when, you know, playoffs are played and then decision of like who's coming from the championship to the top, in addition to, of course, the big derbies. But what are your thoughts on that? Do you really feel as excited about this new product becoming a really good broadcast product when it's actually happening?
Yeah. And I think obviously that's one of the main purposes of this. You know, I'm a huge fan of college basketball and March Madness. And I look at things like the US Open Cup and the final weeks of promotion relegation. And I think those should be similar models for how you cover these types of short-term, you know, high-threat but high-reward types of events. And, you know, unfortunately, the US Open Cup has never gotten that type of focus, the type of focus it should, and the excitement certainly that we have always gotten out of it. You know, going to play, we've gotten to go play at Portland and Galaxy in front of 15,000 people. It's really something. Obviously, I think that takes it to an entirely different level when you're going for promotion relegation. And it, you know, TV numbers for soccer in the US have to go up. And they have to kind of correspond to what's going on at the base of fandom among kids. And it's happening slowly. But this is hopefully something that's going to make that process far faster and have some of these networks identify that when you have Jeopardy and you have something you're playing for at the end of the season, it really does make for spectacular television. And, you know, we have an advantage, obviously, in this country. You know, I don't know the exact numbers, but obviously there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Division I teams across Europe in a similar population to our country. So, you know, this is not an either or here. Like, these two processes can very easily develop, you know, one alongside the other for a long time. If you're familiar with the history of US sports, you know, the ABA and the NBA and the AFL and the NFL and all this stuff goes on, you know, we don't remember it, but it goes on for a decade, two decades, before they figure out a structure that kind of works for everyone and gets everyone involved. And maybe that's where we're headed right now, is a USL headed on one model and MLS headed on a slightly different model. And at some point, we figure out how to bring those two things together.
I was just going to say that you mentioned a lot of those, and those were big mergers to further the product, right? The NFL is the dominant sporting force in the US. Do you see, again, if you can look into your crystal ball, you said, I hope that's hopefully the case, but do you see kind of MLS keeping an eye on USL, being like, all right, I like what they're doing over here, or those things, and maybe how we can kind of do two heads are better than one, and put that product together for the ultimate, you know, soccer product and pyramid in men's soccer in the US here?
I hope so, but I think honestly, it more has to do with the fan than anything else. You know, when we wrote this, I wrote a letter to our fans when this passed and said, look, ultimately, this is about you guys voting with your feet and voting with your wallets. And that really is, to some extent, what this is. Like, you've been talking about this for a decade, some more, how much you want to see this happen. It has to then come down to them really, you know, showing that they want to see it, watching it, showing up for games. And again, I, you know, certainly above my pay grade as to what USL and MLS at the top levels are talking about or not talking about. But, you know, obviously MLS is going to be watching this very closely. We at OCSC have had a very interesting relationship with MLS over the years, both cooperative and at one point a couple years ago, you may or may not be familiar with, they tried to use the city council in our city to get us kicked out of the stadium and get exclusive use of our stadium for their third division team. And we, you know, we brought 800 people to a city council meeting, and 3 months later we had a long-term 10-year deal at the stadium. But, you know, this is U.S. soccer is still a little bit of the Wild West. So the idea that anybody has this all planned out is, I don't want to call it silly, but it's certainly, there certainly is not a long-term plotted plan. This is going to go along. Everybody's kind of figuring out as they go along. And, you know, everybody's got to figure out from a USL perspective. I mean, I like the championship. We're a community team. We're going to continue to build additional seating in our stadium. Has always been part of our plan. You know, the player development piece is what makes OCSC, you know, different than just about any other club, not only in USL, but really in all of US soccer, in terms of our focus on developing players and selling them to Europe, where we've been more successful than any other club, probably in US history, over a 3-4 year period in doing that. All those things are going to get better, regardless of how this process ends up. But, you know, there's now going to be a new process of how many teams from existing USL Championship want to go up to Division One, how many can build a big enough stadium, how many have the finances, how many have the fan base, population of your city, all these different questions. And, you know, it's going to take years, 27, 28, 29. Part of that depends on U.S. soccer and how quickly they make their decision. But, you know, it's a very exciting time, but it's a fluid time.
Can I maybe ask you, this USL says in its statement that a super majority of club owners voted in favor of adopting this new ProRail system. Can you share like a little bit of who voted and why? There were a lot of owners like you did that went to the fans and discussed it with their fans, or you're a very specific case of ownership group? I don't know. What can you share with us?
I think the ownership groups in USL, I mean, just in the decades since I've been involved, have changed dramatically from a lot of kind of mom and pop and small operators and people who owned minor league baseball teams and figured we'd play some soccer too, to a lot more sophisticated, larger groups that understand and are kind of linked to the future of where this game is going. You know, not only here, but globally, obviously, we've been very in tune from day one, a lot relating to the transfer market, but to how we are seen by the rest of the world and how we can kind of integrate into the rest of the world. That's certainly going to have something to play, especially with the World Cup coming up in 26, the Olympics coming up in 28. You know, there are a lot of eyes, obviously, from around the world, looking at what's happening here. And, you know, there was a big move, obviously, of American owners into the Premier League, the Championship, Serie A, all these different leagues. You know, I think we can expect to see the opposite happening now. And this gives some of these other teams a chance to get into U.S. soccer. You know, who knows, the next MLS team might be $800-900 million. So who knows? There is nobody, I don't think, from an outside European perspective that's going to come in from an existing team and do that. So how do you get a piece of the growing U.S. pie, and how do you participate there? USL is probably the best bet.
Yeah, 100%. I can see that. And that's where you're seeing especially a lot of athletes in other sports getting involved with the USL, getting involved with the NWSL, because, you know, that entry fee almost and that expansion fee is significantly less than it is for MLS, that you need to have some pretty deep pockets or some pretty good friends.
Involved. It's good friends. Right?
You kind of touched on it a little bit earlier about this, the formation of the new Division One league. And it sounds like it's going to be a combination of USL championship sides, maybe some expansion sides as well too. So is that something that you guys are considering about? I know you said earlier, I like the USL championship. Are you thinking, hey, you know, and you said it earlier too, we want to expand the stadium a bit, add some seating. Is that in preparation maybe for going up to that Division One league there? Is that something you guys are looking at? And, you know, if so, why? And if so, why not?
I mean, that was not why, you know, we've always said everywhere that, you know, for kind of what we do, we thought 8,000, 8,500 is the perfect size from a business perspective and a fan perspective for our stadium. You know, we have the advantage. Orange County's got about 3.3 million people, you know, another couple million very close. So we certainly have the size to do it. We're obviously watching this process very closely, and we're very interested, and it's certainly something that we're looking at. You know, it's not my first focus on the model, but by the same token, you know, we need to see how this plays out over a couple years. We need to see it get approved and under what terms U.S. Soccer approves this. We'll obviously have a big piece on how this thing ultimately goes. But, you know, we are clearly looking at it very closely. And I think, you know, there's a group of teams that are closer to the right size of their stadiums and very, very focused on this every day. And there's a lot of us in the middle that are very interested, watching it very closely and could participate, but could also be very happy, you know, with the model we've developed over the last decade. You know, I want to see players that we develop play on the U.S. men's national team and play in the Champions League and play in the biggest leagues in the world. That's always been, you know, a core tenet of our club. And I believe however this plays out, this will make U.S. soccer far more competitive and make the desire for U.S. soccer players, especially elite ones, far more competitive.
Yeah. You know, I was following the NASL versus U.S. Soccer MLS case, which this topic of the how do you get the Division One status discussion was on the center of it. So the stadium size is one of them, right? In order to get the Division One status, all teams have to have 15,000 spectators and above. Also, these teams need to be separated in the region in like some important. I think in USL, you guys sort of have that. You have teams in both conferences. But what are the other changes that will have to happen, let's say, for Orange County SC to become a Division One team in the USL? And how would that impact your strategy off and on the pitch? Like, what are the things that you're thinking about doing? Like, here's what we need to do to get this Division One to compete in the Division One USL instead of, you know, staying in the Division Two, if that's the case, and however they're going to decide the process.
It's a very difficult question because we really don't know above, you know, the seat requirements and the net worth requirements of the ownership group. We don't know that much else about one, you know. There is a set of rules in place right now. Are those going to be the exact set of rules that are applied when approving the USL Division One? I have no idea. Again, I use the phrase above my pay grade for things that I cannot control. And this is definitely something more where we need to be watching what's happening and how this is developing and then figure out what our strategy is. You know, from my perspective, very little is going to change. You know, we have international partners. We're going to continue to have international partners because that's going to be core to our development, both bringing in talent and helping our talent get to the highest levels in the world. And, you know, this is an international game. It's going to increasingly become so. And with the multi-club models, you know, that basically everyone around the United States outside of the U.S. is starting to become part of, this is all going to become tied together in a far larger way. So, you know, there are multiple different ways that we can approach this, but it's a good position for us. We like, you know, the different options that we have available to us here. And this is another option that's great for USL championship owners.
You mentioned, you know, the club ownership and obviously your owner and CEO, but you guys also have a community investment program as part of it as well, too. I know you opened it up in the States and, if I'm not mistaken, abroad as well, too. So I would just love your thoughts on that and just making Orange County, you know, a team for the community that people can have, you know, some vested interest in the club. I know there's a few of them in the USL championship, especially that are kind of along that similar model. So I'd just love your thoughts on why that's something you guys wanted to do and what that reception's been.
I mean, we, from the beginning, you know, since I purchased the team and we were playing in front of, you know, 60 people in a stadium at the back part of UCI with concrete steps, you know, our kind of principles as it related to all of that stuff is the same, which is, you know, don't reinvent the wheel. Look at the rest of the world, see how they do it, and do the same stuff that they're doing just here. And that's really where the player development and transfer strategy came from. That's also where the ownership strategy comes from. You know, we have what we call the Southern California, Southern Florida problem, which is the farther south you go, the less people are born there. And a lot of people just don't grow up with the link to their local teams in the way you would in the Midwest or the Northeast. You know, men and women, even if they don't like the sport, they go to games and they're part of it because it's what you do. We have less of that in Southern California, not to mention the fact that there are 86,000 things to do, including going to the beach. So the way that we really came up with how do we get people more tied in to what we're doing, following what we're doing, you know, a sense of ownership, whether it's, you know, $10 or $10,000 or $1 million, it really ties people to the team. They follow closer, they're more engaged, and they feel a sense of ownership. And, you know, we're going to continue to do more and more of that. You know, we've got owners all over the US, all over the UK, a bunch all over the world, and we're going to just keep doing that and expanding it out. And I think there is no negative to it. It only has positives.
As a beach person, I always suggest match time to start after sunset. It's still like probably conduces more people to come to the stadium to have that sunset beer after a great day at the beach, you know, just saying. Your club also has announced a partnership with famous Scottish club, the Rangers. What can you tell us about that relationship, how it benefits both sides? And also, are there any other partnerships in the horizon for you?
You know, we have a partnership with Rangers that was certainly very close, and we did a lot of things with them, you know, right before and after the COVID period. And we obviously had a number of their players over here that played with our team in 2020 and 2021. We obviously still talk to them, but we're doing, I think, less with them right now than we historically have been. We have a partnership with Feyenoord in the Netherlands, and we transferred a player over there, Caradio Sandina, who did very well in their Dutch second division team and was just bought by a Portuguese first division team, Casa Pia, that I think is fifth or sixth in the Portuguese league, and he's doing great. And that's kind of more of our relationship with them, has always been very player focused, and, you know, continues to be. And I think we will have more, and we will have more substantial ones. I think at the end of the day, it's about having skin in the game. If you want to have a really successful partnership, there has to be, you know, mutual necessities on both sides and links that are so strong, usually, you know, stockholding links or money related links that make everybody top to bottom focus on what's happening there. And again, this goes back to the multi-club model stuff. You know, that is, in my mind, the biggest reason why you can have partnerships with 10,000 people. But if they have a Champions League game tomorrow, and then they're playing, you know, Celtic in the Derby in a week, they don't have any time or energy to focus on anything else long term. There has to be a superstructure that is focusing on partnership and player development and commercial development that kind of sits on top of what's going on day to day at the clubs.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
How much you've talked a lot about that player development, and we want someone from our town or from our club to get to the national team, to play in the Champions League. So how much do these relationships with these European clubs help facilitate that? And like you said, it is a two-way street that they're sending some players to you guys and vice versa. It isn't just them being like, how can we poach Southern California for players? So again, just talk about the importance of that relationship, knowing you guys do have this two-way street in terms of, you know, sharing player assets, if you will.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it's slowly, very slowly becoming a three-way street. You know, obviously, when I talk about don't reinvent the wheel, in general, the majority of players who go from the championship in England go to the Premier League. That's historically not been a path for USL players to go to MLS. That's changing very slowly, but it is changing. And, you know, those really are at this point, you know, there's starting at the U15 national team to the U17 to the U19 to the 20s to the 23s. You got a lot of steps and you want your players as often as possible to participate in those by the same level. If a kid between 16 and 18 is playing, you know, in a country abroad and getting first team minutes, that is as valuable or more valuable than playing at a, you know, U17 tournament. So you have to kind of balance out those things and figure out, you know, we have a kid named Pedro Guimarães, who's a 16-year-old, you know, very highly rated talent, starter on the U17 national team. He's starting for us right now. Our entire model says that there is nothing more valuable for a 16, 17-year-old than playing real minutes with grown men who are feeding their families and being professionals. Many of them have been professionals for years and years, and it's important to get that them into that structure very early. You know, that's what we believe separates us from a MLS Next type system, is these are grown men. Like, this is their job. Many of, you know, we got guys who played in the Premier League and the Dutch League and Norwegian and Danish first divisions. You know, these are professional soccer players, and you got to practice with them every day, and they're not going to treat you nice. And that's what moves these guys quickly. The same reason why when your 10-year-old is too good to play in his league, you need to move him up to the 12s so that he actually competes and learns. That's exactly what we're doing. So, you know, I think everything is a piece of it. The international is a piece of it. You know, do you want your players going to Real Madrid? On some level, yes. But on the other hand, is he ever going to play a minute? Are we better off having a player go to, you know, Feyenoord second division, being watched by their first division team, and then his next transfer is to, you know, Leeds or something like that? You know, that's a lot of what we look at, is what's the right destination for each of these players, because in our model, we keep a percentage of the future transfer rights of every player we transfer. So I'm not necessarily always focused on the first transfer. I'm more focused on where he goes and what that second transfer looks like.
Yeah, I love that. Ultimately, like you said, it's whatever's best for the player. That you can't just go to a club and then you're going to sit on the bench and you're like, well, great, we got our transfer fee initially. They're 17. You know, this is their problem now. It's how do you continue to facilitate and grow? And it sounds like a very iron sharpens iron kind of situation in terms of getting them some significant minutes, regardless of what the league is. But if they're good enough to play up, they're playing up and they're playing at a higher level. So I definitely understand that. Obviously, exciting stuff happening with the USL. And James, thank you so much for joining and telling us a little about the known in the USL and the new Division One and Pro Rel, but also the unknown. It sounds like it's definitely going to be a work in progress. So everyone get your popcorn ready. You know, thanks again to our guest, RNC SC owner and CEO James Keston, for joining us. Shout out to our producer, Ethan Joseph, and our video and social media producer, Louis Yeo. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.